All right, guys, we'll go ahead and get started. You guys met me out there. I'm Michael Davis, pastor of Anchored Hope Church out in Troy. We planted almost 6 years ago, and so I'm the multiplication guy on the district. We're going to talk about this question right here. What are you aiming for? And I want you for a second just to think about that. I want you to think about your context or your church or your business or what you may be in. And I want you to just think for a minute, could you answer that question? If I asked you the question, what is your church aiming for? What would you say? Now, some of you may look at that question and you might go, I have no idea. Which is maybe why you're here. Because when you think about that question, what are we aiming for? You feel like, you know, I really couldn't tell you. And maybe that's even why you're in this workshop, because for you, it just kind of feels like your wheels are spinning a bit. Like maybe your church context is you're a church who you've got some really creative people, you've got some dedicated people, you are doing things and you are spending money, yet there is no traction, right? And maybe that's the problem, is you don't know where what you're aiming for, you don't know where you're going, you don't know what to celebrate, you don't know what's a victory or what is a loss, and you couldn't answer that question. What are we aiming for? For others of you, you may not be able to answer that question, but in your head, you're going, I could tell you what we should be aiming for, right? And you'd love to pull your pastor or your leader aside and go, look, this is what we need to do. This is what we should aim for. This is what we should be doing, right? Here's the importance of this question. What am I aiming for? The importance of this question is this. Let's see if I don't screw this up. Well, I already screwed it up. Oh, there you go. If you aren't aiming for something all the time, you'll hit nothing every time. And some of you guys know exactly what I'm talking about, right? If you aren't aiming for something all the time, you'll hit nothing every time. Because you won't know if you hit the target or not. You won't know if this is a bullseye, if this is a complete miss, if this was close but not completely there, or if we just totally blew up the whole thing. I mean, if you don't have something you're aiming for, it would be like taking a dart in this room and just blindly throwing it. And somebody asking you, did you hit what you wanted to hit? Did you mark what you wanted to mark? Did you hit the bullseye, or were you a mile off? And I'd go, I couldn't tell you, because I don't know what I was aiming for. It was a total shot in the dark. I just know we're a church, and this is what churches do, right? And so we just do it. I couldn't tell you what we were aiming for in worship this past Sunday. I couldn't tell you what we were aiming for in the children's department. I couldn't tell you what we were aiming for in the youth ministry. I can't tell you what we were aiming for at VBS. I don't know what we're aiming for in Sunday school. We're just doing churchy things is what we're doing. We're doing churchy stuff and spending churchy money for the sake of doing churchy things, because that's what churches do. But if you ask me the question, what are you aiming for? What's the success? What's a bullseye? I really couldn't tell you. And that's the context that a lot of our churches live in. It's just churches doing churchy stuff, spending churchy money with churchy people standing around. And the reason we don't have traction and the reason that we don't end up getting anywhere is because we don't know what we're aiming for. And quite honestly, when we don't know what we're aiming for, we're hitting nothing 90% of the time. Maybe every once in a while we accidentally hit something and we go, oh, sweet, a new family, a baptism, a new member. Great, awesome. But quite honestly, a lot of times it happens just by complete accident. Because we don't have a target that we're actually aiming for. Now, this is an important question, and we have to be able to address this. And we have to address this in every single context that we have in our ministry, in what we lead. Our volunteers, our teams need to know this. Your teams, your teachers, your teen sponsors, they need to know, what is it you want me to aim for? What is success? What is a failure? Because when we have those successes aimed at and focused on, well, then we have reason to celebrate, right? Which celebration is a good thing. You know, what you celebrate is what you will repeat. Okay, that's a great, great line that I've heard before. What you celebrate is what you will repeat. And so we have to know what is worth celebrating. But the other thing is we have to know what a loss is. Because that's where we can go and evaluate what needs to be cut. What do we make sure we never do again? What do we need to stop spending our money on? Because it's a loss. It's not getting us anywhere. This is not a win. This is something we can avoid. This is something we can put away, and we can put it to bed, and we can never do it again. Because we know what a win is, and we know what a loss is, and this is very clearly a loss. So again, I ask you the question, what is it that you are aiming for? If you don't have a target in mind, you'll hit nothing every time, which is what some of us many times do. So real quick, I want to give you three don'ts, okay? Three things to make sure that you're not doing. Because these are things that we have to avoid. Because whenever we think of what are we aiming for, and we start to answer that question, we start to formulate the answer to that question, there are three things I want to make sure you don't do, you don't go there, you don't go in that direction, okay? So, three don'ts. The first one is this. Don't be generic. Do not be generic. Probably the most generic what are we aiming for answer that I hear, especially in churches that are struggling, especially in churches that don't know what's next, is we want more young people. Have you ever heard that before, right? What are you aiming for? What would be a win for you? What do you want to see happen? We want more young people. Okay, what in the world does that mean? Okay? What do you want? You want 20-year-olds? You want teenagers? You want, is 32 old? Do you want that 20 to 30 gap? Do you want families who are engaged? Do you want young families without kids? Do you want families with kids? Do you want families with little kids? Do you want families with big kids? Are you okay with the kind of modern family vibe? Are you okay with gay couples? I mean, what is it that you mean when you say, we want young people? Because I don't know what you mean by that. Explain your context to me. Explain to me what it is that you want. When we're that generic and we just go, well, we just want young people, all we're admitting to ourselves is we're a dying church and we know we're not going to last. It's too generic. We've got to get, when we're talking about what we're aiming for and we're talking about a bullseye, I'm not talking about a big bullseye. I'm talking about you got to find your target. You got to find your niche as a church, as a ministry, as a group of people, and as a community. You've got to find your thing that you are going to outshine everybody at. And you've got to get a specific target that's unique to anybody else in your community, that's unique to any other church that's around you, to unique that's what anybody else is offering you. You cannot afford to be generic. The second thing is this, don't be over spiritual. This is another one I hear a lot of churches tell me. What is it you're aiming for? What is it you want? Well, we want God to move. That's a really good Christian answer. Did you get that at kids camp this year? That's good, you know? But what does that mean? What does it mean you want God to move? We all want God to move. The church down the street wants God to move too, okay? There's a lot of people who want God to move. But again, get specific with me. What do you want to see done? What do you want the result to actually be? If you want God to move, God can move in a lot of specific context. But that doesn't mean that anything is actually going to create a result that you want to see. So if you just say, we just want the Spirit to move, you're not really going to get anywhere. You're going to spin your wheels even more so. And if you think, well, you know, what's wrong with that answer? Well, here's the thing. You even take it back to what Jesus did in Jesus' ministry. Jesus was very specific with his disciples on what to do, right? When he sent out the 72, he said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go house to house. If the peace doesn't fall on them, what did he say to do? He said, shake your sandal off and keep moving on. He was very specific. He was very detailed on where to go. He said, go to homes, right? He said, if they don't take the peace, then wipe your feet, leave the town, go to the next one. He was very, very specific then. With the disciples, when he left, before he ascended into heaven, what did he tell his disciples? He said, go make disciples. And what did he say to do? Baptize them and teach them everything that I've taught you. Jesus was very, very specific with the disciples about the outcomes that he wanted to see. Something that was quantitative, that could be measured, that could be counted, that could end up being something that we could qualitatively measure, right? And outcomes. Something we could see, something we could grasp, something we could measure, something that could add up. He had a specific goal in mind. And when those disciples went out, they had a clear vision of what was a win and what was a loss and what they were aiming at. We are here to make disciples. The same thing that Jesus did to us, something that was relational, something that was with a group of people, something that had a community involved in it. That's what we're to do. The outcome that we're looking for is for people to be baptized And we're supposed to teach them everything that Jesus taught us. That's our theory of multiplication. That's what the disciples knew to do, right? We cannot afford to be generic. We cannot be generic and say, well, we want people saved. We want to see God move. We need specific outcomes, things that we are grasping, we can grasp at, and things that we can shoot for. And then the third thing is this: don't be something you're not. So I'm going to share things from my context today at Anchored Hope Church. What I share with you, it may not work for you, okay? Because here's the thing. You're not a 30-year-old male with tattoos and two small children, okay? So my context may not work for your context. I live out in Troy, okay? I live around farmers. I live in a community with cheap and affordable housing, and so a lot of families move in, so I have a whole context of families. And I have something that I have found that I'm very good at that all the other churches in the town don't know how to do. And so I have a unique context, and I have a unique set of skills that help me know what I'm supposed to do and what I'm supposed to aim for. And here's the thing, what works for me may not work for you, okay? I went to North Point last week, Andy Stanley's church, you know, a big church that planted 23 years ago, has 22,000 people, 7 campuses. It's phenomenal. You know, I look at them and I look at what they're doing in Alpharetta, Georgia, and I go, man, how cool is this? I wish we could do that, and I wish we could do this. But I also know, too, my context doesn't fit their context. And so I can't take everything that, you know, North Point Community Church is doing and replicate it and make it what Anchored Hope is, because it just doesn't fit my people, doesn't fit my community. It doesn't fit who they need me to be. And so we can't just take something that we've seen online or something on TV or something that somebody else is successful at and go, well, that's what we're supposed to do. No, don't be something you're not. You've got to figure out your identity in the church, in the community, and who your people need you to be. So those are 3 don'ts, right? Don't be generic. Don't be over spiritual. Don't be something you're not. When you're formulating the answer to that question, those are the things that you've got to put together. So then, how do we discover what we should aim for? How do we discover that question? Well, the first thing that we kind of have to ask ourselves to answer a question is ask another question. And that does, who does our community need us to be? This is huge. Who does our community need us to be? So whenever we planted Anchored Hope Church 6 years ago, the first thing I did was I just did an analysis of the community. So I pulled up all the census forms, and I looked at how many churches there were, how many people there were, and then I found all the churches. So in my somewhat small county, city of Troy is really like a one thing I learned about the context of the town is that the town was like a hub for a county of farmers, right? So there's Troy, but then it goes all the way up to like Eolia, and then it goes to Winfield, and then it goes to Silex, and then it goes right down this highway of 61 down to Winsville where it meets another highway, right? So really, my context is not just this town of Troy, it's this county. And so I looked at all the churches in that county, and I found First Baptist and Assembly of God and Lutheran and one Catholic church, and I found all the non-denominations and stuff. And I did an analysis, and there were 32 churches in the county, okay? And then I looked at each church. I looked at their website, and I looked at their ministry, and I looked at what they offered and what they did. And what I began to do is began to eliminate kind of what other people were probably doing better than me. My buddy today, who's coming to do another workshop on Outreach Church, his name is Jesse. He planted years before I did. They've grown their congregation to about 700 now. They have a youth ministry that is awesome, that I could never, ever beat. And so youth ain't my game, baby. Okay. I got like 15 teenagers. That's good enough for me. That is fits the context of the teenagers and the families that come to my church. That's awesome. But I cannot be the dodgeball church. I cannot be the awesome, cool youth pastor church. Didn't have a youth pastor, didn't have a staff, didn't have a facility, didn't have the money. Not even going to touch that. Jesse is the youth ministry guy and the outreach guy. He's awesome at that. That's his shtick. That's his thing, right? Then I look at what everybody else is doing. And so I had to find my context and what I could be good at, what was going to be uniquely anchored hope. And so immediately we moved into an auditorium. Pretty much the only place we could find to meet was a school auditorium on College Street. And that school auditorium, many other churches had started out of there, including Jesse's church, Journey Church. They had started meeting in there. And we met in there, and across the street were the district offices. Across the street on the other side was the middle school. And then right down the street was the elementary school that had the highest amount of poverty in the entire county. In that elementary school. And then behind us were government paid for apartments that people of low income could move into for X amount of time, okay? So I'm looking at my context, and I'm looking where God put us and where we were meeting at, and I'm looking at what everybody else is doing. I've got the district offices across the street from where I'm meeting. I've got the middle school right here. I've got this school down the street, and I've got these government-owned apartment complexes behind me. Okay, so what is nobody doing? Nobody is touching this 5x5 block, okay? 5 blocks that way and 5 blocks that way and 5 blocks that way. No church is near me, and I have all of these schools around me. So I start to go to school and go to the district offices, and I go, what does the school need? What do these kids who are in need need, right? And so they start giving me answers. Well, we need this. Well, we need that. And I go, okay. So I go back to the drawing board, and I find that Anchored Hope can provide those needs. So one big thing that we first did is we did a Christmas thing for all the kids who are in need at the elementary school. We got them brand new pairs of shoes. We partnered with Shoe Carnival. We bought brand new pairs of shoes for 60 kids. We had a big Christmas breakfast thing. We provided that. Well, then we started to change that, talking to Kyle Rainbolt from Trinity Church, who was doing an affordable Christmas shop. And we said, hey, that's a really good idea. That could kind of change. Instead of giving these shoes away, this is something we could do. It would have to raise more money, but we could do this. And so then we started this last year to provide an affordable Christmas shop. And it went bonkers. It was awesome. We started with just that school. We found out there were no churches. Out of 32 churches in the county, nobody was doing anything for families in need at Christmas. And so we said, okay, this is our niche. This is our thing. If nobody is doing anything for families in need at Christmas, we can be the church that does stuff at Christmas. So we did the affordable Christmas shop, and we opened it up not just to the school, but the entire county. All the schools in the county, we opened it up to them. We raised, and our little church, who at the time was 80 people, we raised $12,000 in 6 weeks. To go out and to buy brand new toys at Target. We partnered with Target. They gave us a 20% discount on everything. And we got so many toys. We ended up with $15,000 in toys. We still have them in our church because we couldn't even give them all away. We have $5,000 in the bank ready to go for this next year's affordable Christmas shop. But it didn't just end there. The school loved us so much and came back to us, and they said, what else can you do? I found a woman at the school who for years had been buying and saving and recycling prom dresses and suits and tuxedos. And I thought, okay, here's another need. The school came to me and they said, we have so many kids who cannot afford to go to prom. And they especially cannot afford dresses, suits, or tux. And so I went to this woman who had been gathering these up, and I said, what do you want to do with these? And she said, I've always wanted to distribute them to kids, but I've never had the ability to do it. I said, give them to me. I will take them. I will distribute them. So she gave us all of her inventory, and this last year we opened up the affordable prom shop, and we let kids come in, and for 10 bucks they could buy a brand new dress, they could buy a tuxedo or a suit or anything they needed, shoes included, and they could go, and they could go to prom, and they could have that dress, they could have that suit, or they could return it to us, and we'd dry clean it, and we'd recycle it, and we'd give it back. So we had all these kids. We opened up. The school gave us a room to store all the dresses and stuff, and to allow the kids to come shop. And after school, all these kids came in. They shopped. They got dresses. Kids were crying. They found their dress. They were able to go to prom, and they were super excited. That's my niche in my community. I'm the guy who does stuff with the schools. Okay? That's my thing, and that's who Anchored Hope is. Nobody can touch me on that because I've got my foot in that door. You've got to find that thing, right? You got to find that thing in the community where you can go, oh, you're the church that does the thing, right? You're the one that has that ministry. You're the one who has that awesome youth group. You're the one who does that Easter egg hunt. I'll tell you the other thing in my community I'm known for. I'm the only guy in the community besides one other church who does an Easter egg hunt because everybody else thinks the Easter bunny's the devil, right? And then everybody thinks that Halloween is of Satan. And so I'm the guy on Halloween night that partners with Kroger's. Kroger gives me their entire parking lot, and our entire church comes for 2 hours, and we set up a trunk or treat on Halloween night for 2 hours. And people can come, and it's a family-safe alternative, and they can go trunk to trunk instead of door to door, and they can go trick-or-treating or trunk-or-treating, and it's a safe alternative on Halloween night. And the families love it. We have, in an hour this past year, we had 3,000 people come through in an hour to our trunk or treat. And so we're the church that does a trunk or treat. We're also the church that gets the emails that tell us we're going to hell for doing something on Halloween. But that's our thing. That's our niche. And that's our thing that we are able to do. And we do it well, and it's organized well. And when people see us or when people hear us, they go, oh, you're the church that does that ministry. You need to be known for something. What you don't want to be known for is you're the Nazarene church. What you don't want to be known for is you're the church on Brooklyn Street or whatever it may be. You're the church that goes in and turns their lights on and opens their doors on Sundays. That's not what you want to be. You want to be known for something that is who you uniquely are. Compassion oriented, love oriented, whatever it may be. Okay? Our context is based on our vision and mission. You've got to see what that vision and what that mission is, and you got to choose what that context is going to be and create around that, okay? The other thing is this. Oh, I went back. I'm going to put this back up. So you need to discover what your community needs you to be. You need to investigate if someone else is doing it or if you can do it better. Assess what it would take to make it happen, change things accordingly, and then keep questioning your aim. So again, I'll go back to the affordable Christmas shop. We were doing this breakfast with Santa thing, the thing with the shoes. The breakfast with Santa thing is something that we would do every year, but we kept going back after every time and going, okay, how do we make this better? How can we reevaluate? What do we need to change? What is it that we need to do? And so that's how we ended up with the affordable Christmas shop. And that came out of, you know, talking to Kyle and talking to Trinity and learning from them. And they were given that and they learned from somebody else as well, right? So you continually have to keep questioning and changing your aim and keep adjusting just a little bit. So let's go back to what we used before as our classic example, right? We want more young people. That's what everybody wants. That's what everybody says. What do you want? We want more young people. Okay, so let's go back and rethink that with everything that we've learned today and kind of reimagine what that would look like. So we want more young people. Let's get a little bit more specific. Let's not be generic, okay? We want to see young people, families with small kids. We want an environment where kids can come and they can feel like they're safe and they can be ministered to. And what we want to see is we want to see lives change. We want to see people have a growing relationship with Christ. We'd love to see them be baptized. We'd love to see them be members of the church. And then we would love to see them invite their friends. That would be a great outcome that we would like to see happen. Okay, so let's investigate if somebody else is doing that or doing it better. Is somebody just going to blow us out of the water on that? I mean, is somebody so far ahead of us that we're going to have to catch up? We're just going to waste our time a little bit? Or is there something that could be uniquely ours? Maybe we could create an environment that's going to be different than what everybody has. Let's assess and see what it would take to make that happen. So I'll use a great example of something that probably a lot of our churches should honestly do. Okay, so if we want young families to come and worship with us on Sunday morning, and we want them to come and spend time with us, let's talk about Sunday school, right? Let's look at our Sunday mornings. Are our Sunday mornings appropriate environments? Are they conducive with families like mine? People who are in their 30s with two kids, ages 18 months and 4 years old. That's how old my two kids are, right? Well, here's what I can tell you as a parent. Going anywhere for 4 hours with my children stresses me out, okay? And my kids are not going to be able to stay in a room a fifth of this size for 4 hours, right? And nor do we have the capacity of the amount of volunteers or the curriculum to be able to teach them for an hour and a half in one environment and to keep them in a room and then to swap out with two more volunteers and to teach them for another hour and a half without them losing their mind and the volunteers losing their mind. So here's the thing, like when it comes to Sunday school, it's not gonna work in my context. I have almost 50 kids in our worship every single Sunday. On Easter, we almost had 60 kids come to our church. If I ever had Sunday school, it would sink my battleship is what would happen, okay? Because I know my kids and I know other people's kids, they cannot be at church for 4 hours. And I don't have the material, I don't have the amount of volunteers to teach kids and keep them busy for 4 hours. It's just not conducive. So like our church and our environment, we don't have it. We have small groups during the week, okay? We really, really stick to an hour and 15 minute worship service. And I tell my volunteers, hang on for that hour and 15 minutes, all right? You can make it. You can do it. And we spend a ton of money on good curriculum that's easy for our volunteers to teach. We create rooms and environments that they want to stay in, right? That's something that you've got to answer, and that's something you've got to look at. If you want young families to come to your church, you've got to ask yourself, okay, we're shooting for people who are like between the ages of 20 to 30. Then you need to look at your environment. You need to look at your sanctuary. Does your sanctuary fit the mood that most 20 to 30 year olds like to hang out in? Do you know many 20 to 30 year olds that like to sit on a wooden bench? Because I can tell you, my butt doesn't, right? Are you singing the music and the songs that most 20 to 30 year olds like to sing? Because here's the thing, this is not the 90s. They have been exposed. They have Joy FM, right? They know the music and they know the songs that are out there that have been created. If you can't provide that music, you're already behind the game. And if the church down the road is providing that music and that kind of children's department and that kind of environment, you're already behind. You're not going to see young people come to your church. You know, you got to think about, what do young people want to hear taught to them? What kind of topics do they want to talk about? Every single year, we talk about sex. We talk about finances. We talk about relationships. We talk about work. I do sermon series based on all these things because I know that the context and the people, the families I'm aiming for, those are the things they want to learn about. Those are the things they want to hear about. And so I've got to talk about those topics that the Bible addresses that fit within that context, right? So that's just an example of how we can go through each of those bullet points, each of those little steps, and start to arrive at what we might need to change accordingly, what we need to start doing to kind of sharpen our aim and to be able to go in the right place. So that's just an example. So we've got about half hour left, okay? I don't want to just filibuster this thing. So I want this to kind of be kind of an environment where we can have a conversation and we can talk a little bit. So why don't you throw me some questions or some thoughts, some things that may be rattling in your mind, some things that maybe you've been trying or maybe you've gotten stuck, and we can kind of talk about them for about 15 to 30 minutes, and then we'll move on. So go ahead, throw me some thoughts, throw me some questions you might have. And if you don't, it's going to be a real weird 30 minutes, all right?
So, what do you think about people coming to church? Because we do, like, we have food distribution, and we don't have the parking lot for it down where we're at. And so we partnered with the Baptist Church to do that. So we're working together to, like, get the food distributed to people in the town and all that.
Yeah.
So that's worked out for us. I think at certain times you can really partner with different groups. Like, I know in the college that we have in Rolla, you can go with the Christian Fellowship, do things with them. Like I guess we could be called the food church because we have a lot of food that we distribute. We get a lot of food from the food bank.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we do. and then we try to work with other organizations in the community and, you know, do that. That seems to be working.
Yeah.
Do you have any examples of, you know, that?
Yeah, so I'll tell you two things that came to mind on that. I think if, yeah, whatever niche you can find, find it and then squeeze the life out of that lemon, right? So, and just find ways that you can adapt it. It's like the affordable Christmas shop. It ended up being the affordable prom shop. And we thought, how can we take this idea and this model and method and take it and use it somewhere else? Take it and use it in the fall. We've been playing right now with using the idea of the affordable Halloween shop, because a lot of families, our kids grow out of Halloween costumes, and what in the world do we do with them? We throw them away, you know what I mean? What if people would be willing to give those away for free? We could get free inventory and we could take that and we could use it at Halloween again to provide a need for families, right? The thing that I think is really important that you mentioned about partnering with other churches, I think partnering with other churches is great, but the thing you've got to realize is your return on doing things with other churches is going to be lower, because it's seen as a community event, right? Or it's seen as an alliance. Like, we have two ministerial alliances in our town, and so when you do things, it's not seen as Anchored Hope Church pulling this off. It's seen as the ministerial alliance. The other thing you want to be careful of is sometimes you don't want to be with those groups because you don't want to be associated with them. So I'll give you a great example of what happened to me. I've been kicked out of two ministerial alliances so far, and I'm totally okay with that. The first one that came to me, they said, "We're the ministerial alliance. We'd love for you to come and, you know, for you to be a part of this." And I said, "Okay, I'll come to a meeting." And they were planning during Black History Month, they were planning a service, and the whole point of service, I feel terrible even just saying this, it just sounds racist coming out of my mouth, but they're like, "We're going to have, for Black History Month, to show that we're diverse, a black service," is what they called it, "and it's going to have black music and black choirs." I'm so sorry, Teddy. "And it's just going to be, you know, like black everything." And I was like, "I'm out," you know. And I was like, and then they like did that for like Latinos on Cinco de Mayo and stuff. It was just so awful. And I was like, I don't want to be associated with this, because I don't want, when people, you know, say who pulled that off, and they said First Baptist, Anchored Hope, and the Catholic Church, I don't want my name in that group. The other one that happened to me was we had a worship in the park thing. And so we got together and we worshiped, all of our bands combined. And after every couple of songs, we would pray, okay? Like pray as a community and stuff. And so I wasn't even like paying attention to what everybody else was praying. One guy specifically from one church was kind of running the deal, and he would pray before every pastor. He was just constantly up there praying. And I wasn't paying attention to what he was praying. I actually was preaching a series on love, and I just prayed what I had preached that morning, kind of. And it was all about love and accepting people no matter what. And it was just very inclusive. Well, I didn't know, because I wasn't paying attention, because I was thinking about what I was going to say. He got up before me and did this whole bashing of people who had abortions and people who were homosexuals. And I got up right after him and I prayed about being inclusive and about loving everybody in every context. And I didn't even understand. And then I got off stage and people came and started shaking my hand and said, "Thank you for what you said." And I was just like, "Well, that must have been a good prayer. All right." Oh man, I knocked that one out of the park. Until afterwards, the pastor called me and he said, "Hey, why did you try to outpray me?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Well, I prayed that, you know, gays would be changed and people who had aborted a baby would feel bad. And you're like, I love everybody." And it just kind of like put water out on me, made me look bad. And I'm like, I didn't know, you know? And so we had a conversation and he was very blunt with me. He's like, "This is what I'm about. These people, they're sinners and they need to know. And we need to preach against that." And I said, "Well, I'm not preaching against anything. I'm preaching for what I'm for, not what I'm against. And so we're going to have to split ways. And so I'm not on that ministerial alliance anymore. And we don't do those things, because I don't want people, the community, to know me for what I'm against. I want them to know what I'm for. That's my thing. That's who I am, and that's the DNA of our church." And so it's great to partner with people to do ministry. And sometimes you just do that because you're like, this is a win for our community. We just do this. But when you're trying to find what's uniquely yours and really get a win under your belt and make it part of your DNA or part of your brand as a ministry. There are some things you need to avoid, and there are some things you need to do on your own. Because like the Easter egg hunt, that's something I've been successful at. And other people have said, can we jump on board with you? And I've gone, no, I'm just fine. this is my thing, and this needs to be all Anchored Hope. This doesn't need to be ministerial alliance or anything like that. So,
okay. Because, like, I know, like, I do college stuff in our church, too. Some of the things I've had to avoid is college ministerial alliance because it's got some groups on it that
right.
aren't really following Christ, and they're not, Christian.
Exactly. And and that's the other thing too. Our theology may not line up with other people's theology too, right? You know, we are holiness. And, so what we may accept in a certain context may be totally different than what somebody else would accept in a different context. So, yeah. Anybody else?
Sometimes all what you're saying is good.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think we're getting maybe too much like Salvation Army. Salvation Army does great services, right?
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about a particular church now that have great outreach to the community. I mean, they've really great outreach. This church hasn't grown at all. How many people have they got saved in the last couple of years? A few, maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They got an out.
Right, so they're really good at that. Yeah, they've got that down, but you're not seeing like souls change, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I think that's the thing is, what's a win in this area, but what's the end result, right? So,
you back.
Like our mission statement at our church is make disciples. That's the bottom line because it's just easy, right? Make disciples. So, it all has to go back to that mission statement at the end. So we may have an Easter egg hunt, and like we've had many of them, and we go, hey, that was great. But the number that I really, really care about to evaluate whether we should do the Easter egg hunt or not is how many people eventually came to church because of that Easter egg hunt. So like we've had the Easter egg hunt for years, and we'll have about 1,000 people come. That's great, and most people would go success. I'm looking at the next day, because we do it the day before Easter, how many people come the next day though because of that, because that's the whole point. And so we were this close to stopping the Easter egg hunt because I was going, there's no return on this. Nobody's coming to church. This is good. It gets our face in the community, but maybe we need to shift a little bit and do something else. But then this past year, and I think it's because we had a building, we had 16 people show up the next day. And I'm like, okay, we'll hang on to it for another year. Because that is the thing. I mean, as a church, we are here to, clothe the sick and feed the hungry, and that's really important. But the ultimate goal is to see people in heaven, right? To see souls changed and to see people have a relationship with Christ. So I agree with you. There's a lot of good we could do in the community, but if it doesn't filter towards, them having a relationship with God, it can really be missing the mark. So did that answer your question or your thought? Because I agree with you, I mean, I know a lot of my colleagues, they complain and moan about reports at the end of the year and go, oh, it's not about numbers. Shouldn't be about numbers. And it is about numbers. Because if you're not growing, you're not making disciples. If you're not increasing.
Each number is a soul.
Exactly. I'm in full agreement with you. I mean, that's my time to check myself. If I'm not growing on Sunday mornings, if I'm not having lives being changed, then there's a problem there, right? I need to see that happen. So, no, I'm with you. Teddy.
This has really got me going with this question. What am I aiming for? And, being in the area that I'm in, I've got three counties right within. So the struggle is I'm in Shelby County.
Right.
I got Macon County. I got Randolph County. And in Clarence, which is Shelby County, there's no grocery stores.
Uh-huh.
So you have nothing to base yourself off. You can't go to Macon County and ask for something for, where I'm at.
Right.
Shelby County, which Shelbina, they're covered. We're tapped. We can't give any more. We can't do any more. Randolph County, they got food banks. They got food pantries. they're only covering their area, you know. So there's no jobs in my town.
Yep.
And it's like, what am I aiming for?
Yeah.
You know, how, where do you go?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking at when this question here, you know, I mean, I know that we're doing some outreach, you know, this year so far, we've been doing a special Sunday, you know, like next month, we're doing a 70s, 80s thing. You know, you dress like 70s, 80s. You know, just something to bring some around. People to do weird things. You know, just make playing. But there's nothing. Well, there's something. I know God can take anything and make it different. But there's no resources.
Right.
So where do you pull resources from? You know.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like the lady said down there, when you close your eyes and there's, you know, there's a void. There's nothing. You know, God created from nothing. How do you create that target that you want to reach?
Yeah. Well, I think that's where you have to go back to the question of, what does my community need me to be? You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of things that, like, we wish we could be, but we just can't, because it just doesn't fit the context, you know? I have a lot of friends up in North Dakota, and there's been a big boom out there the last couple of years, but it's kind of dying down because they've found a lot of new oil and stuff, right? So they've had this, you know, new surplus of families come because of all this oil. Well, now it's kind of dying off, and now they're not sticking around. They're going back, right? So now they're like, well, what am I going to do? You know, this is your context. You know what I mean? Or you take the churches who live around, like, military bases, who see this revolving door of families, right? You have to accept that these families may only be here for 4 to 8 years, and then they leave, or they may get called off duty, or you have families where dad's off serving over in the Middle East, and this is your context. And so, like, those churches have an extreme handicap, but you cannot fight the handicap, because it's just the cards in which you were dealt, right? So it's like the situation that you've been dealt. It's a lot like when my dad pastored in Oklahoma. You know, it's the same thing. Like, in this county's the grocery store, in this county's the Walmart, in this county's the drugstore, you know? And it's like, you've got to figure out, what is it that these people need us to be? And I think one of the best ways you can figure that out is to survey people, is to talk and to look at where the need is, you know what I mean? To talk about what maybe is missing in the community that could be addressed, you know what I mean? What is it? Is it childcare? Is it anything with the children? Is it something with the teens? Where is the disconnect where you hear people chatting about, oh, if we only had an answer for this, okay? Because if you can find a problem, like, that's how the greatest ideas were ever invented, right? These entrepreneurs and these people who are creators, they saw, this is missing from people's lives. Man, if people could just have a phone that's a computer, that could have everything they could ever need, if somebody could just figure that out, and it could take pictures, and it could do this, oh, how much simpler the world would be. And somebody found a solution to it. And that's what we all have to do. In our context and our worlds that God has given us or planted us in, we have to look at, who does God want us to be to these people? We've become the shepherd of these sheep, but they're a different kind of sheep than anybody else's sheep. And so I've got to find exactly what's missing for them or what it is they're looking for. And then I got to find a way to answer that need and provide for it and pastor my people in the hopes of bringing them into a community where I can disciple them and make disciples, right? That's the whole thing that we're looking for. Does that help a little bit? Yeah.
Sometimes it's about being able, you know, using your church and your time to connect people with the resources that might be available somewhere else. Like, I work with a pregnancy center, and we're very rural. I mean, I'm never going to find a doctor to do ultrasounds out where we live, but I can drive people 30 minutes to a county where they mm-hmm. can get an ultrasound, and I can help them get that payment so that they'll see that baby, to keep that baby. So sometimes it's not about, how do I get resources in my church so I can give them to the people I need them, but how do I get people to need these resources to where the resources are available?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your best response to a mindset of, this is how we've always done it? We want change, but... I mean, besides saying get over it.
Teddy. Everybody knows how I answer that question. Art probably knows how to answer that question too. This is the way we've always done it. Okay, you give me context and I'll think of the right way to answer.
From Nashville, and we're in a very small rural community.
Mm-hmm.
So we have kind of a big vision.
Yeah.
But we have people that are more stuck in this is how we've always done it. We want change, but this is how we've always done it.
Yeah. So, okay, so one thing that helps you never go there, like I've never... I'm very fortunate, and I understand it, as a church plant, because there's no past, right? Which is a great reason for planting churches. So there's my church plant sticker. But it's easy for me now that I'm getting in the... I have a building now, and I have a home, and it's we're not a church plant anymore, to get in there of this is the way we've always done it. One of the ways I make sure we never get there in the first place is I'm constantly changing things, right? So like I'm constantly reevaluating my aim and doing that with my leadership and doing that with my team is even though we have a super successful event, some people view it as pessimism. I'm not pessimistic. I always ask the question, okay, how could it be better? One thing I do with my leader, with my staff and my leadership team or my board, I call them my leadership team. I send my leadership team an email every single week. And I put the statistics of how many people we had in service, if we had any professions of faith or anybody have a relationship with Christ. I put the tithe and offerings that came through, all the statistics, the numbers, because the numbers matter, right? And then I answer three questions. What went well? What could have gone better? How do we make it better? I do that every single Sunday, and I email that to my team, and I involve them in that conversation. What went well? Celebrate the wins. These are the victories. I want you guys to know this is important to us. This is what we should woohoo about. Now, what didn't go well? Okay, now how do we make it better? Every week I do that. And I ask all my volunteers to do that. So my teachers who teach the classes, they send me the same email back, and they send it to all the teachers. What went well? What didn't go so well? How do we make it better? The teens do that, the volunteers do that, every area of ministry, I have them ask that question. It helps us communicate, especially since I have a rotation of teachers. They may not know that Jimmy has had two bad weeks in a row, okay? And so we gotta show little Jimmy some grace. But if they're emailing each other and they're evaluating that, it's also how we can come up with solutions, because what a lot of them do is they jump in, well, what went bad this week? Well, this transition is just not working. And somebody will jump in and they go, oh, this is what we do. So we're constantly changing and evolving, you know what I mean? And pushing each other and being creative. That's how you get out of that rut, or at least create a culture where we're never satisfied. And that sounds bad, but we always want it to be better is what I mean, right? And if you can create that among your team, among your board, among your volunteers, that, hey, look, even though we did it this way, we can always change, we can always make it better, we can always adapt, and we can always focus a little bit more to get that target even more in the middle, that will create a culture of everybody wants this to be the best it can, and we're going to continue to strive to make it better. Now, when you have done it that way for so long, the short answer is, let's evaluate, are we growing or are we dying? Okay? Okay, if this is the way we've always done it, and we continue to do it this way, we will die. Okay? That's the short answer, and that's the hard answer, and I some people still can't even see past that, right?
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
We just went through, and we're finally on the tail end of this. It's been a 6-year process where I work for a large company. We just went through a lot of changes because we got a new upper administration and everything, and they came in, and they were making changes that should have been made 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's hard, and we have a lot of people say that, well, this is the way I've always done it. Well, what they finally did was they got tired of hearing that, and they said, but why do you do it that way?
Exactly.
And what they found is the people don't know why they did it that way.
Yep.
It's just the way somebody told them to do it, so that's what they do.
Yep.
So then you can kind of start from there.
Yep. And here's a great tool for especially people in leadership and pastors when you enter into that context. You can come in with a big axe and start chopping things down, and you will be an enemy quicker than you are a friend, okay? You can clear out the forest, and you can clear out the weeds, and you can get this thing all cleared up, but you're not going to have any allies at the end of it. So the thing that I always tell people in those contexts is don't destroy what is old, create something new. Invade and infect, okay? So my dad, who some of you may know, Brian Davis, he planted New Life Church in O'Fallon and was on this district for 30 years. He's now in Topeka, and he went to a very traditional church of 400 that had Sunday school and all this stuff, but is obviously dying, right? If we continue to do this the way we've always done it, we will die eventually. And that's the answer he got to a lot of stuff. He's trying to create this new atmosphere, this new environment that's, you know, for a new generation of Christians that's different, that's more caught up to 2018. What he's done is not gone in with an axe and start chopping things down, but he has created new things and invaded and infected things and let some of these things die, right? They want to go do that over there. It's fine. Go let them do that over there. It's not going anywhere. It's not growing. It's dying. So eventually it's going to do what it's going to do anyway. You don't need to run in there with a weed whacker and chop it off. It's going to disappear on its own eventually anyway because time's running out for it. So leave that over there and start something new. Start a new small group. You know, go to your leadership, go to your pastor. And these are the people I love was they come in and they go, I think I found a need in the church. I think I found something that I'm good at. I'm passionate about, I'm creative at. I want to do something about this. Can I start a small group? Can I do a ladies' night? Can I do a men's breakfast? Can I lead this thing and see if we can go somewhere with it? Absolutely. And then if it's successful, replicate it, multiply it, and let it grow, and let it start to take you on that uptick, and let it be something new, and let it give new life in a bed of stuff that was dying. And eventually, this will outgrow this, and it won't even be something you need to do. And everybody will see it, and everybody will be so on board because it'll just catch itself. Now, that takes longer, and that it takes more patience because obviously we want to run in with an axe and start chopping things to death. But it's just going to leave you more wounded and hurt and have people turn against you faster is what it's going to be. So invade and infect, right? If you can have an influence, great. But if not, just create something new. Start something new. Have a little side project of get some people that are passionate around you and then just begin to replicate it. Let it multiply, let it grow, and it will become something that's really cool. And it'll work itself out. Anybody else? We got like 7 minutes. God, I gotta have one more good question in you.
So yeah. What's your recommendation for the small church with 20 people? And we are dying.
Yeah.
And we are sitting on weed pews.
Yeah.
And we're not creating an environment.
Yeah.
And so it's just like maybe everywhere.
Yeah.
But there's no volunteers.
Yep.
And there's not enough funds to go around. You know,
right.
What I mean? To support all the needs.
Yeah.
So what's your suggestion of like where to start?
Treat it like a church plant. Okay?
Which is?
Start over. To reboot the thing, right? That's what you do with a computer. If it's acting up, shut it down and restart it. Throw away everything from before. Shut it down. We're going to rethink this thing from the ground up. Let's stop and pretend. What's the name of your church? Nazarene Church, First Church of the Nazarene, yeah. Original, right? Yeah, I've been there, it's okay. I've been to that one. First Church of the Nazarene, right? All right, First Church of the Nazarene, whatever town, is dead. It's done. Okay, now we have 20 people. We have 20 people who want to start a new church. You can start again. I started with 6 in a firehouse, okay? You go back to the drawing board, and you find your identity and who you need to be. You go through this, okay? What First Church has been is done, so you're done with that. Now, whatever you're gonna be, what does that community need you to be? You got 20 people. You got a great team to start with, a great group of people to start with. Investigate what everybody else is doing, and what you could do better, or what you could do and you could compete in and that you could provide to your community. And you go through that and you just start from scratch. I think that's the best thing you can do. Instead of feeling like you can hold on, just say, you know what, it's done. Even if it means you need to go back and start in a house and say, you know what, we got this building, but we're not gonna use it. We're not gonna use the sanctuary. Sanctuary doesn't fit us. So you know what, there's 20 of us, we're fine. We can meet in this back room, or we can meet in the gym, or we can meet in this multi-purpose room, and we can set up chairs, and we can make it look completely different. So you know what, we're not the sanctuary church right now. We don't even need a sanctuary. We're not big enough for the sanctuary. As a matter of fact, when we're in here, it looks dead and empty, right? But in here, it looks like we're full and vibrant, and it looks like a room that's like, oh my goodness, we're packed. There's a little bit of energy in here. And so we're not gonna use that room in there that we can't even fill. We're gonna go over here and we're gonna use this context. And then when we outgrow this, we'll start to get there. And while we're in this room, we'll start to build that to what we need it to be in the future. You know what I'm saying? So cut it down. Think about what you can and can't do. I tell people all the time, look, we've got this formula that we think we've all got to stick with, where we come in and there's three songs and there's prayer and there's a sermon and there's this or that. Nobody told you you had to follow that formula. I've had weeks where my worship pastor is gone. And I'm like, well, do we have anybody talented enough to fill in? Do we have anybody talented enough? You know, you saw my worship pastor up there, Josh. He's super talented. I've had Sundays where all three of those guys are gone except for the bass player. All right? And he's like, dude, we're all going to be gone. We've all got this thing. You know, what do you want us to do? And he's like, you know, Darren could play bass and somebody could sing to a CD. And I'm like, okay, if we do that, everybody's going to know this is not what a normal Sunday looks like. So why don't we just do what not a normal Sunday looks like? And I've had Sundays where I've said, no worship. We're not going to do worship. What? But you have to have three songs, one fast, one semi-slow, and then one super slow, and then prayer. That's what we have to do. That's church. No, nobody told you you had to do that. And so I've had Sundays where I've been like, hey, there's going to be a teaching, and then we're going to hang out, and we're going to eat donuts, and we're just going to be friends together, and we're going to play some music, and somebody's got a testimony to share today. And no, if it's going to be different, just make it different anyway. You know what I mean? And if it's going to look lame, then cut out all the things that look lame. Right? I mean, why force yourself to do it for the sake of doing it? It's like if you don't have the resources, if you don't have the tools, if you don't have the people, it's probably something you shouldn't be doing. But again, we do churchy things for churchy reasons just because we think we should be doing churchy stuff and spending churchy money. But it doesn't make any sense. So I would just start from ground zero and go, okay, here's what we have. We have 20 people. What do we have? What can we provide? I didn't have youth. I've been going for 6 years. I didn't have youth for 3 years. And people are like, we need something for our youth. I'm like, I know, but we don't have anything. We don't have any volunteers. We barely got any kids. We got three kids. I'm sorry, we don't have anything right now. So there's no reason to do it. I'm not going to force myself to do something that we can't do or we just shouldn't do because we can't compete with some people. And it's just not who our community needs us to be right now. So we're going to focus heavily on this. I think it's good to have a heavy foot on one gas pedal instead of trying to run around and make all these things work that you just simply can't make work. So I would just start out, you got a great, that's what we call in the church planning world a good core group. That's a good core group of people to start with and say, what can we do? What can we have? Because that sounds like a great small group that could be really good at discipling people that other churches in your community may not be providing. A good in-home discipleship program with a great group of people who can pour into each other relationally, where it's not about a guy on stage with a microphone with lights and music behind him, but a group of people that pour into each other relationally, and it's more underground, homegrown, different looking, right? You've got stuff there. You've just got to pull at it enough and unravel it and find out what that could be. But I would just say start from ground zero again. Just start it. I would even change your name. I'm dead serious. There's nothing that says you have to be First Church of the Nazarene. First Church of the Nazarene is dead. If it's already gonna die, then just kill it. Make something new, give it a new name, a new brand, a new identity, and make it awesome. Because I've had to change my name 3 times in 6 years because of all kinds of different reasons. It's fine. It's never deterred me. It's just a name. So you create a brand, you push that brand, you push who you are to your community, you find them a way to find you, and people will become a part of it. People will join you. Yeah.
So, okay, you got the aim, you know you need a vision. There are people that are terrified of new vision. There are people that are on board with new vision. How do you bring all those in your church to the same vision and then hit that gas pedal?
You sell them on it.
Well, okay, so what if the sales pitch isn't defined yet?
Then you wait. Okay, so I just came back from North Point Ministries. A huge, huge weakness of our church is small group ministries. I keep playing with a lot of different things. It's not what I want it to be, right? So I need it to get better. So I went to North Point where they did it's called a regroup conference. They basically tell you how they do small groups, and they've got it down. Their whole system is we're a church of circles, not rows, and it's beautiful. They're not a church that offers small groups. They're a church of small groups, right? I came back so ready to just start tearing things apart, right? And just like, we're going to change things. We're going to do this, blah, 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 blah. I've got to figure it out, right? So like, I've got a sabbatical coming up. I hate doing this, but I'm going to wait 4 months. I hate waiting that long, but I'm going to wait. And I'm going to figure out how to sell people on it, because I need to explain the why behind the what, just like what she said, right? I got to explain the why behind the what. And I've got to be able to articulate it well, and I've got to get people to buy into it and go, I get it. This is why we're doing what we're doing. And then when you figure that out, then you figure out what to celebrate. And then when those wins start happening, when you start hitting the bullseye, you start celebrating those moments, and people start to go, okay, this is what it's all about. This is good. This is awesome. Yeehaw. Awesome. This is where we all clap, and we all feel good, right? But it takes time, and so don't jump on it. Don't come back and go, okay, this is what we're going to do. You've got to formulate it. You got to pray about it. You got to think about it. And you got to be able to articulate it well and sell people on it. Otherwise, it won't stick. Right? So, well, our time's up. If you guys need to talk to me, my email is michaeldavis@anchoredhope.church. Feel free to email me, talk to me afterwards. I'll be here all day. But thank you guys for coming, all right? We'll see you guys later.